Welcome to the Sunday Night There Is a Solution newcomer and returning members meeting of Overeaters Anonymous. Visit our website at oaontario.org, where you'll find this audio recording, additional podcasts, and a place to donate to keep this special service active. The opinions expressed are those of individual OA members and do not represent OA as a whole. We will now introduce our speaker, a member who has had at least 6 months of abstinence, has recovered through the directions in the Big Book, and maintains recovery on a daily basis. After the share, there will be time to make a comment or ask a question about the OA program or what the speaker has shared. Please help me welcome Catherine, a compulsive overeater from Ontario.
Thank you so much, Audrey. Hi, I'm Catherine A., recovered compulsive overeater. And just starting my time here. There we go. All right, so I am hoping to share with you tonight a little bit about my journey, basically what this disease was like for me when I was, before I came to OA, when I was in active addiction, and what has happened since I started working the steps, and kind of what life is like for me now, having been working the steps. And my hope is that as I'm sharing this, somebody on this call may hear something that that resonates with them, maybe makes it easier to identify in. Because I think that one of the things that I've found is, you know, coming to these rooms, I hear all sorts of different stories. And in so many of the stories, even if they're different than mine, there are kernels that stand out to me that are like, yeah, that's like me. And it makes it feels like I'm coming home when I hear that, and helps me recognize that this is a solution that can work for me, and that I can stick with it. So I hope that that sharing my story here will help somebody that way too. So just to qualify, I don't have a memory really of not being a compulsive overeater. I can't pinpoint the first time that I binged. I don't have a distinct memory of that. I know that I was always kind of obsessed with food. You know, my first memories revolve around food. It was a running family joke that all of my memories of important occasions were about like what food did we eat when we went on that trip or where we went at that point. And you know, my first memory is of the day my sister was born, and I don't remember her at all, but I remember where I had lunch. So I know food was always important to me. I don't know at what point it shifted to being an addictive thing, or where I was using food to numb my emotions. But I know for sure by the time I was in middle school, I was definitely using food to get an effect. And, you know, I was going through a hard time emotionally. And, you know, looking back, I know that I was going through a hard time emotionally, but I don't have a lot of memories of the emotion because I was so effectively numbing it with all of the food and finding every excuse to, use my autonomy anytime I was alone to get food. And that continued through high school, you know, standing at the cabinet in the kitchen, like shoveling food into my mouth as quickly as possible, and then hiding the evidence at the bottom of the garbage can so nobody in my family would know how much I had eaten. And so food and emotions were always very tangled up for me to the point that I didn't even really recognize, and I couldn't recognize really until I stopped eating the food much later, that's what I had been doing, that I had been numbing out these feelings of discomfort or pain. All I knew was that I would eat, and that certainly had an effect on my weight. You know, I was always an overweight kid as I was growing up, and that continued through to when I was about 19. but I was, I don't think that we can look at somebody or that I can look at somebody and say, like, because they are overweight, they must have this disease, or because they're underweight, they must have this disease, because I have been so many different sizes and this disease has manifested in so many different ways for me through my life, that, you know, being one way at one time, like one snapshot of me at a certain moment, doesn't give you the full picture of what I was experiencing in my head. And I think that's why it's so important that this is a self-diagnosed disease and something that, like, really it's only the person who's in their head who gets to determine whether they have this or not. For me, I know that I had it because I know that obsession, that compulsion to eat. Like, the only thing that's important in the next minute is to get food, and I need it as quickly as possible, and just that drive for that hit. And the you know, to the point of, like, leaving gatherings, like I very distinct memories of being at gatherings with friends or with family, and, you know, they didn't serve dessert. Like, what sort of people don't serve dessert after dinner? And when I realized there was going to be no dessert, I couldn't get out of there fast enough because I had this compulsion. I had to get dessert. I had to have sugar. And getting, beelining it to the nearest convenience store as fast as possible and getting as much stuff as I could. And always the combination of chocolate and candy. I had to have two different hits. It was like a different thing, because just one, it would start to get boring. It would start to get numb, and I had to mix it up. That sort of thing, like, I've never lived outside of my own head, but I don't think that's what everyone experiences. That sort of compulsion, to me, really seemed like an addiction. And that continued even when I started addressing my weight. I was overweight, and I didn't want to be overweight anymore. And so I went into a restricting mode. I would restrict my food through conventional diet methods and over exercising. And I lost 70 pounds doing that, but I wasn't healthy. I hadn't lost these compulsions. I would restrict, and then binge. And over time, over this several years, when I would do a lot of yo-yoing up and down, the same, you know, 20, 30 pounds up and down, up and down, and up and down, I would be restricting and then binging. I never lost the compulsion. The restricting was just another manifestation of that compulsion, of the problems that I had with food. So it was never really about the weight for me. It was about that drive and that addiction to the food. After, you know, many years of up and down, I had recognized that this was a food addiction. I had recognized a lot of similarities in how I thought to some of the ways in which another addict in my life experienced alcohol. And so I could see that there were the parallels, and I could see that it was an addiction. And I read a book that pointed towards 12-step programs. But I thought that I could do it myself. I was like, okay, I've read this book now. I know that abstinence is the way to go. I know the things I have problems with. I'm just going to be abstinent. I don't need to go to meetings. I don't need to, like, do that sort of spend time on that. Like, I'm a busy person. I've got lots of other things to be doing. I can do it myself. And I did it myself for, you know, a few months. I don't know exactly how many months I did that myself, but gradually I forgot
or let myself forget, or I don't know exactly what happened, but no matter what, I got to a point where I no longer believed that it was an addiction and that I could be just like everybody else, eating just a little, everything in moderation. And over time, the compulsions came back. And over little by little, everything just snuck back in and I started spiraling. And, you know, I would use one-on-one time with my daughter as an excuse to go for food. You know, I'm pretty sure she thought like spending time with mom was when we went to get ice cream, was when we went to get cookies. And then, you know, at home I would hide food from my daughter. I would steal food from my partner. And just finding all sorts of excuses to get takeout or treats. And basically my bottom was when I had just spiraled to a point where like I had this compulsion to have ice cream pretty much nonstop, that I would be finished breakfast and it's like, well, I need dessert for breakfast and I need to have ice cream right now. And I would be eating ice cream pretty much all day, you know, hiding it. And I didn't want to live like that anymore. I was so just drained from fighting it, from the constant cycle of restricting and then binging. And it was harder and harder to restrict. And I knew it wasn't going to be getting any better. So that's what finally helped me remember that I did at one point know that this was an addiction and that 12-step programs exist. And like I said, I've got, you know, a family member who is also an addict, and I had seen 12-step recovery work in his life. And so I had some trust in 12-step programs. Didn't know what was involved, but I trusted that it would work, that it would be different. It wouldn't just be a diet, that it was actually going to address the root cause of these compulsions that I was dealing with. And so I looked up OA and I looked up what would be involved with developing a food plan. And I really wanted to run in the opposite direction. But I had recognized that I needed to do this, and I needed to put my trust in the program, because whatever I was doing wasn't working, and I couldn't think of anything else. And I'm so glad that I did, that I just stuck with it, even though it seemed impossibly hard at the beginning. It took me 2 months of attending meetings sporadically to find a sponsor. The first meetings I attended didn't have a lot of strong recovery or sponsorship. So it kind of just felt like a diet at the beginning, which I really hated. I knew that there was something missing, and I felt that this strong drive, like I needed to find a sponsor. And I was very lucky to find a big book sponsor who was able to take me through the steps quickly and really intensively. So I started working the steps at the end of April last year. So this is it's been just a little over a year now that I've been working the steps, and my abstinence date is May 9th. So coming up on that. And so I just want to describe a little bit my progress of working the steps. With step one, as I described, like it is around desperation. Like I was desperate to find a different solution, because anything that I had tried for my whole life hadn't worked. And my life had just felt so unmanageable in so many different ways, not even just the food, but you know, I'd been stuck in this downward spiral of anxieties that had just been getting worse and worse for several years. And, you know, I tried therapy a few times and it just hadn't helped. Like nothing had worked, potentially because I wasn't being fully honest with the therapist, but either way, it wasn't, that wasn't working for me. Step one and connecting with that desperation, really articulating it was very important to me, because especially after I had been clear of the food for a little while, my brain started to try to tell me that, like, oh, you know, it wasn't that bad. Like, it maybe you can do things just like everybody else. Like, you don't have to have such an extreme food plan, or you don't have to, you know, you don't have to go to more than one meeting a week. You don't have to do outreach calls. You don't have to do all these things your sponsor's asking you to do. I had to really connect with that desperation of understanding why I had come to the program in the first place, and keep reminding myself of what that mindset was that day that I made that decision to join OA, and just keep coming back to that, because my brain will try to tell me that it wasn't that bad. But I have really no interest in going back to how it was. So when I had that solid foundation of step one, moving on to step two was a really interesting one for me, because step two says we came willing to believe in a power greater than ourselves that could restore us to sanity. And I was agnostic, I would say, coming into the program, but formerly a very, very firm atheist. And I had a lot of prejudice and intolerance towards the word God, just the concept of a higher power. I, you know, when I was younger, very firmly thought that, you know, I had no need for a higher power. You know, maybe other people need concepts of God or religion or things like that, but I don't need that. And yet, looking back, I recognize that I had this deep, almost spiritual loneliness, this feeling of being lost. And I also recognized that I was treating myself like I was supposed to be the higher power in my life. That, you know, if there is no other higher power, then I have to be that higher power. And that triggered a lot of anxieties for me, because I also recognized that I was powerless over so many things. But I felt like I had to be perfect. You know, I had to be that power. And recognizing that there was a power greater than me, even if I couldn't name it or determine what it was exactly when I was in step two, just the willingness to let go of me being the higher power and just be willing to see something else as the higher power. You know, at first it was just, it was the program, honestly. It was the fact that I could see so many other recovered people and coming together to help others. Like, just the very fact, the existence of 12-step programs was a higher power to me to begin with. And that opened the door to exploring more of what a higher power really is in my life, which continues to evolve as I work step 11. So step two was really just the opening. I didn't need to come up with that full understanding of what a higher power is for me. It was just that openness, that willingness to believe that there could be a higher power, that it's not me. And then step three is a decision. I like the emphasis on step three of, you know, it's not about really working step three for a long period of time. If you're working step three, you've moved on to step four. That said, the pages around step three in the big book are some of my favorite, where it describes, I feel like it describes me perfectly. And if you haven't worked step three yet, if you haven't looked at those pages yet, I definitely encourage reading those. And when you get to it, rewriting them in the first person and reading that out loud. I read that out loud to three Fellows while I was doing the steps. And every time I read it, I felt like it was speaking to me, that this was an exact description of how I was trying to be the higher power. I was trying to run the show. I was the director, the actor trying to be the director of the show. And I come back to that all the time. And step three is, I feel, a step I have to take every day. It's not a one and done. It's a decision every single morning to relinquish control and admit that, again, that I am powerless and that I need to turn over that desire to control things to my higher power instead. Steps four and five was where, you know, the real work starts, really doing that inventory and then sharing it with my sponsor. And I found a big part. I initially was hesitant about step four because I thought in finding my own part in things, you know, I heard that finding my part in my resentments was going to be an aspect of step four. And my worry was that would just be another form of beating myself up about things, because I've got a long history of perfectionism. And so I thought, you know, well, I already find all of the things that I've done wrong and beat myself up about it. Like, step four is just going to get me further into that. But that wasn't it at all. In fact, in so many cases, what I found was, like, I either needed to forgive myself, like my part was almost the fact I was beating myself up about things. And then in other cases, I was being very self-centered in thinking that I was the cause of absolutely everything, and developing a lot of humility around, you know, I'm able to make mistakes. You know, I am human, and I am just as worthy of love and respect as everybody else. And also, everyone else is just as worthy of love and respect as me. And that those were big takeaways for me from my fourth and fifth steps, because I had a history of either thinking of myself as less than you or better than you, and never just equal. Like, maybe we're different, but we have so many things that are the same, and that we're all equally worthy of love and respect. With step six and seven, when I was initially working them, I went very quickly through them, because, you know, coming off of steps four and five, I was like, oh yeah, all these defects down, take them. I felt willing right away, did the prayer, moved on to steps eight and nine. But I've found that in recovery, coming back to six and seven was so important. And I feel like working those every day is critical for me. You know, asking my higher power how my higher power would have me be, how my higher power would have me show up in my relationships with people. And then, even if that doesn't come naturally to me to begin with, acting as though I am already that person, or at least trying to get closer. And, you know, it's never going to be perfect, but every day I have in every moment, in fact, it's not even just every day, but every moment I have an opportunity to do a little bit better than I did before. With steps eight and nine, you know, the amends process was, it was very interesting. You know, lots of different experiences with every individual that I made an amends to. And I think that step nine for me really continues as well, because you know, there were some of my amends I couldn't make directly, either because it was it would have harmed, or it just wouldn't have made much sense. But, like, between me and my sponsor, we had determined that a living amends would be more appropriate. And so some of those amends I'm living out every day. And that's just part of practicing these principles in all our affairs. And then, yeah, steps 10, 11, and 12 are, some people will call them the maintenance steps, but that's where I really get to deepen my practice every day, is looking at the things that crop up in my life and determining, like, you know, what can I do better? How can I see my part in these situations? And so much has been revealed to me as I've done those and through sponsoring and being of service both in program and outside of program, it's been really life-changing. And I fully anticipate spending the rest of my life working 10, 11, and 12, because it's not just maintaining a status quo. It is really a learning and a growing and a deepening. So just in the last 5 minutes, I wanted to share a little bit about what it's like now, because like I said, I'm working 10, 11, and 12 every day. So I don't really feel like I stopped working the steps. But I will say that the first time I worked the steps through with my sponsor, I thought that once I got to the end, I'd be magically fixed. And that it would, and I wouldn't have told you that at the time while I was working it, but I certainly thought that there would be some kind of like waved a magic wand and everything's perfect. That's not the case. Things still come up in my life, but that's why I've got steps 10, 11, and 12 to use. And I will say that things are completely different for me in my life now than they were before I started working the steps. To the food is almost an afterthought for me, which like is so weird because I came into the program because of the food. But the food is just the start, you know, like I'm not white knuckling. I just stick to my food plan and that's it. Like that's the baseline. That's what I start with. I can easily serve my trigger foods to other people. Like I was serving one of my trigger foods to my daughter for breakfast this morning. I got some on my hands and I just go wash my hands. Like I touched raw meat or eggs or something. It's going to make me sick and I used to be somebody who would like lick my fingers all the time while I was cooking. I've been maintaining a healthy weight. I'm not arguing with myself all the time, either in my head or out or to other people about, well, should I choose this or should I choose this? Like the food is quiet, which is amazing. And then way beyond the food is the fear and self-centeredness. You know, I mentioned that before joining program, I'd been in like an increasing spiral of anxiety that had been getting worse over the years and therapy hadn't helped. Working these steps has just been so freeing. It's like I used to be so afraid of the future and all of the things that could happen and how powerless I was over the future. And just recognizing that living in today and just letting my higher power take care of the future is so freeing today. I don't need to be that higher power, and I can accept myself and others for who they are. And when things do come up, when I do get into anger or anxiety or self-pity, you know, I don't have to numb it with food anymore. And that's really awesome. I have a higher power who can support me through it and help me go through the emotion rather than numbing it out and avoiding it. So yeah, that's kind of what life is like today. And I'm so glad that I found OA and am very happy to have had a chance to share my story today. With that, I'll pass.
Thank you very much, Catherine.